This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 36, Maps with Games.
Hello, everybody. You are here listening to GamesAtWork.biz with your co-hosts, Phaedra, Michael, and Michael. And it is the day after Valentine's Day, or otherwise known as Singles Awareness Day. So we have got quite the lineup show for you today. Right, guys?
Yes, we do. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be super awesome.
Super bad. I mean, super awesome.
Super bad. That was a fun movie, actually.
I don't think I've ever watched it.
No?
Nope.
No, that's too bad.
It's
all right. Well, let's get right to the stuff, because this is going to be a fun show. So today, what we've dialed up for our listening audience and for us to have some fun talking about is a couple of games that at least I've been playing for a little bit that I'd like to talk about, and I'd like to get your guys' thoughts as you always like to get them too. The first of these games is one called Rescue Rush. And Rescue Rush is a game that I started playing just earlier this week. I stumbled across it because the app store said, hey, you might like this game. And because it was free, and you guys know how I feel about
free. I was about to say, we know why you're playing it, because it's free.
Well, it had some good reviews. So I was like, okay, check it out. I figured, all right, it's worth my looking at. So Rescue Rush is a game where you get to be a cute little kitten. And who does not like being a cute little kitten?
Mm. Really? Me. I don't want to be a cute little kitten. No.
Well, and if you don't like to be a cute little kitten, you can use the game's in-app purchasing capability to buy your cute little kitten a tough biker jacket to be tough.
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
Yeah. So the point of this game is that you are out to rescue these various pets and animals that have been imprisoned by evil scientists. And these little animals that you need to rescue are in little cages, and the cages kind of rattle around. And there are coins, or hearts, as there were for Valentine's Day, that you can go and collect for various points. Mm. And this all sounds like, okay, ho-hum, I've seen this all before. But the twist... The twist for this game is that it's using maps and geolocation to, at the very least, start the game where you are. So when I started playing the game and I said, oh, right, yep, fine, I'm here in Budapest, let's go. Well, wouldn't you know it, it started me right here in Budapest. So I started going around the streets in the neighborhood to rescue little kittens and, you know, dogs and giraffes and all kinds of other animals that I had no idea that were imprisoned on the very streets where I am. And I was using real maps from the real location. And to me, this was an interesting swizzle. What I didn't like maybe as much about this game as I did with the Monopoly game, where we're using the real streets that you could actually own the streets and build things on those streets, or other of these augmented reality kind of games where there might be a building or a monument as you're walking around, and there's something about that particular building or that intersection or that fresco that might be of interest to the game. This is really just using the street maps as your grid structure to figure out how you actually play, and that's sort of just the, you know, it's the landscape.
Okay, so now I understand why you care.
Yeah.
Because, well, and I also understand why these maps were so doggone hard. I'm looking at, you know, I'm walking my little kitten around, and he's,
yes,
he doesn't have a leather jacket.
That, well, that's because you probably haven't done any in-app purchases yet, I'm guessing.
Did you?
What do you think?
No.
You gotta cough up the dough.
Yeah, we'll talk freemium again here pretty soon. But no, I didn't buy any app stuff.
Okay, so I'm wandering these maps around, and they're just horrible.
because they're like the nearby subdivisions, which have these really, really bad layouts, and I keep getting trapped in...
Oh, you're like in a cul-de-sac or something, and you can't get out of it again, right?
Yeah. And then, yeah.
It
and then
let
I get...
you turn.
Well, no, you can swipe. If you're going to go make a left turn, before you get there, you swipe to the left or you swipe up or down, and then your little cute little kitten will follow those directions. But if you are in like a cul-de-sac or something, you got to swipe in the opposite direction to have it turn back where you came from. Yeah, so now you understand why I thought it was pretty slick. So I could see where this game could get improved in several different ways that would make it, you know, even cooler. But I like the map aspect to it, and what I think would be also cool. So I'll give you a couple of the ideas where I think it would be cooler. So what would be cool is that if like the three of us were playing, could we play in real time? Could I be, you know, rescuing some of the pets that you're in the process of rescuing? Could it be a little competitive thing? You know, not just how many pets are rescued, but could I be on your map? Could I leave things for you on your map to discover?
Can you leave things on my map for me to discover?
As far as I can tell, not yet.
Okay.
Or that, I mean, I'm just coming up with ideas around it because I love the integration of mapping and maps with games.
Well, I guess the question that I have, so I've done a square. It says there's a magic teleport square that I can open by using a diamond.
Yes.
It only costs me one diamond.
Just one.
I have six diamonds.
Yes.
I keep clicking on it and it won't unlock.
Yes. That's because you have to press and hold, and then there will be a circle that is filled in all the way around, and then it will unlock it.
Okay, so that's trying to get the problem that they had with in-app purchases where little kids were getting buying lots of stuff that their parents didn't approve.
Well, no. I don't take it that way. I take it the other way around, such as on the Simpsons game, which makes me really ticked off.
Where you accidentally
use donuts to speed up something because you just happened to hit a target that was close to where the donut was, too bad for you.
Exactly.
So I like this because you're the critical resource that you don't have much of these diamonds. You're not going to inadvertently use them by accident because you brushed against the screen. You got to click and hold on the screen for it to actually open a square for you.
Yes.
Well, let's just take a minute and brainstorm about how one might be able to use something like this at work. Like, what would be a business case for something like this? And something that just came to mind. So I've got a 9-year-old daughter who's in the Girl Scouts. And right now is cookie selling season in a big way.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this?
Tagalongs, samosas. They don't call them samosas anymore, do they?
S'mores.
I try to stay away from them. I try not to look. So the point is... what if you had this kind of a game, you know, for the Girl Scouts, or if you had to sell things door to door, or if you were in sales somehow and you had to go to different client sites? I mean, is there some way to sort of gamify the whole, here I went to this house and, you know, here this is collectively being shared on this game, and the rest of the Girl Scouts might be able to see and access this. So it's more of a... you know, competitive, collaborative kind of play.
Abso-smurfly.
And then in certain neighborhoods, you know, did you know Girl Scouts have certain territories? And you can encroach on someone else's territory. So can you imagine if each Girl Scout troop had one of these, the neighborhoods where a certain troop sold more cookies would start to get color-coded?
Yeah, absolutely. You could have like heat maps.
Well, not just that. I mean, you think about it from, you know, from political door-to-door canvassing or any of these things too. You could actually show in a customer relationship management kind of mode where people have touched territories, right? You know, here's a house. We've been to it 3 times already. You don't want to go there because they have a big dog and they sicked it on the last girl. Here's a picture of the
– Here's the aftermath. There's a box of cookies all shredded up on the ground.
You know, or it's like
the visualization of the CRM. I like this a lot. That's a great idea.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. And you could do the same kind of thing from a sales perspective to say, all right, look, this business, you know, on the 32nd floor of this, you know, big tower is got a special
thing. Is it a
thing
big tower
it.
Or a tiny tower?
Well, in my case, it would be a big tower. Mm-hmm. But
do you still play Tiny Tower?
Infrequently. I my tiny tower is like 200 stories or something, so I still play it every once in a while, but not that often.
Okay, just checking. But the
point I'm on here is we're talking about salespeople and sales incentives, right? So you might say that this business on the 32nd floor, because of the analytics that's been done and because of the products and services they bought in the past, their propensity to buy these other products are pretty high, and we want to, you know, we think that's a higher percentage likelihood of getting those sales. So go there, and there's an icon that alerts the salesperson to it, and they go and handle it. I think this could be great, Phaedra, to do some map game visualization where these things come together. I think that would be awesome.
I like it. I'm writing it down. We're patenting it. Let's go.
No.
Patent now.
Yeah.
Before or after I post the show.
Yeah. Slice that out, Michael. Just cut out that last bit and just put in, you know, something about geese.
Something about geese.
Chickens.
Yeah, so we're using Farmville. Did you hear that there's gonna be a movie? No, not a movie. Yeah. A TV series. Holy freaking bro.
Isn't that insane?
Hey, look, we're tapping on these squares. Oh, look. We've let these harvests fall fallow or something. We're going to have to plow them in. So anyway, you get the idea. This is why I liked the idea of Rescue Rush. I thought that was a pretty cool thing. So not as cool as that game, but still a fun game, and I will relate the two in a segue fashion that will surprise you.
You mean it'll tip over if you turn off the battery?
do they tip over if you turn off the battery?
If you turn off the battery, it's no longer doing the gyroscopes, and it'll tip over.
How about that?
That's why a certain former president tipped over on a segue. It wasn't turned on.
Which president?
The previous one.
Get out. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we had, I'm going blank on his name, the guy who invented the Segway, at a conference
Segway guy.
Years ago, and he explained it. He was like, you know, the thing won't tip over, blah, 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 and people made fun of us because former president tipped over on one, and that's because we told him, you need to learn how to use it, and he goes, nah, it's fine, I'll just jump on it, and it wasn't turned on, and it tipped over. It's like, maybe you ought to learn how to use it.
Well, you got to admire his, you know, go
gumption.
Forward attitude.
His gumption.
Yes, gumption.
He's a decider. He decided to flip over.
I'm sure that will be cut out, too.
No. You keep wanting to cut things out of the show that are fun.
No, I'm not cutting anything out that's fun. We didn't cut out anything that was fun. They are all in the show. Every last one of them.
Ignore the man behind the curtain.
Ignore the man. So the other game that I was trying to get to is one called Pixel People.
Where you build things and tap on them and splice people.
Yeah. Splicing people. So this game combines a couple of different games that I've played before in it's not really 8-bit. You might say, what, 16-bit? We've got more colors than 8-bit, but it's still kind of cutesy. Space city, where you're building buildings. You're populating those buildings with people. Those people have certain jobs and job characteristics. And if you've populated all the people in a certain building that do certain jobs, then the building creates more value, which then allows you to expand and create more buildings with more people. Right. So there's some game. So what I liked about it is it has a lot of the affinity of Tiny Tower that you brought up, Michael. I didn't make that connection before, but it kind of does. So
it has a lot of the affinity of Tiny Tower.
And it has another neat thing. And now I'm forgetting the other games that work this way, but there are games where you combine different elements. Alchemy, I think, was one of them. Mm-hmm. And you're combining different elements to create new things. You know, so you might, you know, and I think in Alchemy was you would combine like a cloud and a lake and you would get rain. You know, and then you would wind up creating other elements and you would create life and you could do different stuff. In this particular game, the creation mode is you have the storyline says you have clones. Send me the clones! And the clones come in and then you splice them by taking two different jobs as sort of the mom and the dad. And then it will create a new job based upon the mom and dad that you splice into the third.
Yes.
So you get the gameplay of creating these additional jobs, and then you have to figure out, okay, well, I need to find what do they have? What was a receptionist, right? So I needed a receptionist at a couple of my buildings, and it was like, okay, well, how do I create a receptionist? And you're allowed to buy your way into answers on how to create some of those things using the in-app currency of, oh shoot, what's it called? Unobtainium or something like that.
Now the interesting thing here is if you go back to the concepts and thoughts that we talked about a while back on Minecraft.
Yes.
Where you actually have recipes, or, you know, in Skyrim, where you learn recipes for alchemy based off of eating plants.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that discovery thing, not the creation thing that I find interesting, but the actual discovery thing. So paying for the hint to figure out how to create the receptionist seems not fun to me.
No, it's not. But like many of these freemium games, this one's free as well. Free to play, pay an app is if you want to accelerate yourself, you can decide to do that by paying. And you're right. Some of those things are not fun, and you get to a point in the game where once you've created a sufficiently large enough space city here, you're saying, okay, well, I'd like to create the receptionist because I want to fill out this one particular building, because then I get my building bonus and I get more money, you know, created by that building when it's fully staffed, but I haven't been able to figure it out yet. And then you realize when you pay for the hint, you're like, well, okay, well, now that makes sense, because I don't know how to get those pieces or those other jobs, you know, that lead up to it in the job tree. If you think about it, you know, like Vader and some of the games you've been involved in, you know, the technology trees kind of work that way too. So it's the discovery by accident, but you're allowed to kind of get your hint coming forward as to what
in
you need.
In your estimation, do you think that they're obfuscating the path to evolution so that you do pay? In other words, like, I mean, it wouldn't benefit them to make it so obvious, because they want you to get impatient and cough up the money, right?
Well, right. And the way that it works is that as you develop more and more jobs along the way, you can pick the mom and the dad to try to splice into the current clone that you have. And you can do that in a very brute force manner. You can say, all right, I have a martial artist, and I can try to combine martial artist with housekeeper, with farmer, with baker, with a soldier. Ooh, look, a martial artist and soldier, when I combine the two, it tells me that that's a valid combination. And then I click on the button, and then it says, oh, I'm splicing. It's now going to take 7 minutes to tell you what the result is. Mm. And if you have an itchy trigger finger, you might say, well, I'll spend a couple of my, you know, valuable in-app currency to get that answer faster. You might be like, ah, I don't care. I'll get it when it comes back. And then you come back later, and it's like, ooh, I've got a ninja. Awesome.
Got it. I see what you mean. Yep.
So that's one angle, but there are other angles in there too, because you're limited on your city size, and you need to be able to create more size in your city. You have to create housing for your clones, so you don't get an infinite supply of clones unless there's a place for them to live, right? So you've got, you know, those kind of aspects of the game, and what struck me as the common unifying thought perhaps between the two stems from a discussion that was going on MacBreak Weekly this week, where they were also talking about games, and they were talking about the psychology of gameplay and relating that psychology directly to the same kind of psychology that is used in Las Vegas and in the gaming industry, not to be confused with games.
Yes, I actually listened to that one, and I absolutely agree. It's that reward mechanism and
yes,
how
yes.
entice you to just want that one more pellet. Right, ring the bell and start salivating.
Yeah, and just pull
like
the lever
word,
one more time. Salivating. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. But when you really created an engaging gameplay and you establish flow, like we've talked about before, there is the brain chemistry keeps you in the game.
Yeah,
and when I. So Phaedra, you've encountered this already multiple times too. And Michael, you're saying neither of these games have flow.
Well, I would say that out loud.
Well, but you haven't played them so long. So let's go back to a game you played
so
a lot.
You're saying
right?
there's
the Simpsons game. The Simpsons game has an awful lot of enticements there too.
Yeah, but it's kind of played itself for me. I burn out on
but
these
you
things.
You haven't stopped.
Yeah, I know. I'm just about there.
But they just opened new content. You can get Chief Wiggum's house now.
I got it.
I know.
I got it.
So what keeps you playing that game, Michael?
Not the game itself, but the material, because I like the show.
Oh.
So the Simpsons game, though, but what it's doing is it's giving you small pellets, tiny, tiny pellets from the Simpsons writers every so often, where you get an opportunity to hear or see one of the characters say something Simpson-esque, and then you need to play the game for a lot longer to get to the next time that they do that again.
Or I could just wait a couple of weeks before they release more content again. And I'm right on that edge, right? So talk about flow and engagement and the desire to keep going back for that one extra pellet.
So these two games do exactly that. At least I've seen it happen within me, and yep. and part of it, I think, is
bad art
is going. Well, I kind of like the 16-bit art stuff. I guess I'm of an age
2-bit art.
What, like a light or a dark pixel?
You remember the game of Life?
Yes.
Like one of the very first games I think we both put on our iPhones, right?
Yes.
Which is one of the very first games I wrote and put on my Timex Sinclair, right? Where you just have, you know, a simple algorithm. If it's two things next to each other, they multiply. If it's surrounded, one of them dies. All 2-bit. Black and white.
So Phaedra, I know that you're going to need to leave soon, so I really want to get your thoughts on the psychology of games and in the gaming industry and how they relate to one another, because I think there's something really huge here that would even go back to the games that we were just talking about, you know, from the CRM style. But I'm interested in your thoughts.
There's actually a gamification summit coming up in April out in San Francisco, and I know this is going to be a big topic of conversation. And I'm glad you brought this up, because it seems like this can even get religious. I mean, there's some people who really think that the focus for what makes a game engaging is the points, the scoring. And what you're describing is, you know, anything but, right? For example, with the Simpsons game, just being able to see little snippets of your favorite characters, you know, saying really cool things, like that sort of feeds the need for more engagement, or wanting to see how the heat map changes on, you know, the kitty cat game as you're walking through your neighborhood, or even just how cool it is to be walking around a virtual version of your neighborhood with villains and superheroes superimposed. You know, there's something cool about that. And if the storyline changes and keeps you engaged, I mean, these are all mechanisms. The idea of being able to unlock levels or, you know, being mm-hmm. able to contribute to a greater cause. So these are things that are very, very top of mind. But again, I always get concerned when I think people assume that, oh, it's just a points question. And it almost never is.
Exactly. Well, and it's not just a badges question either. I mean, I think people mistake the whole notion of, oh, if I give you a badge or I give you some points, that's it. It's to me, it's the small Pavlovian bell that rings infrequently enough. So let me give another example. In the city of the Pixel People, the trees generate money. Sometimes the trees generate, instead of 100 coins, they generate 1,000 coins, and sometimes they generate this. And I'm misremembering it, but this unobtainium, you know, currency, like the diamonds.
If they generate it, it's no longer unobtainium. You have obtained it.
Yeah. But it's the restricted currency that normally you would want. The game wants you to buy in their
premium
store, right? The premium currency. So. Because it doesn't do that on any predictable fashion, you're kind of there and your eyeballs are glued to it longer because you're like, oh, I might get that, you know, extra, you know, premium currency now, and that'll let me then buy this other thing that I was waiting to buy.
Yep.
Because it's more random.
Yes.
It's more random and you can't predict. I agree. I think that's an excellent point. Excellent point.
So applying that to work is now a trick too, because so much of work is not necessarily fully predictable. I mean, if you're involved in as a file clerk, you know what you need to do, right? Here's a stack of things that need to be filed. But there's so much of the knowledge workers' work where there isn't enough, I think, of those smaller Pavlovian bells that go off.
Mm-hmm.
So how we could apply that concept to work takes us back to, for me at least, back to the beginnings of why I got interested in this stuff in the first place.
Yeah, but I guess so there's a couple of thoughts that immediately triggers. One is in the game, the randomness, the uncertainty that an event will occur is a good thing from a standpoint of you get these little special bonuses every once in a while. In a work environment, in order to encourage specific activities or specific learning exercises or specific events, randomness is kind of almost the wrong thing for that, because you want do an event, get a reward behavior that will encourage the appropriate activities.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That is a true statement.
That is a true statement.
So if I came in today and I was having a really, really bad day at the office, and I was just on a customer call, and I basically just cursed them out and I slammed the phone down and I suddenly got a little reward, that would be bad.
No, that makes sense. That does make sense.
So the question of randomness,
it just needs to be random in the right way, right? To make sure that you're still motivating a certain kind of behavior, but that it's not predictable.
So in that case, let's say we want to discourage that behavior. Sometimes I could be called into my boss's office and told to pack my desk. And sometimes I could just be told, you know, don't do that again.
Go ahead, Phaedra.
Well, one other point, we had mentioned badges and predictability. I think another danger, in addition to people assuming that it's either the points or the badges that are going to motivate people, is that the coolness factor, quote unquote, of having a new medium is enough to keep people hooked. For example, and it won't even be new sometimes, yet people will think, oh, because it's in a first-person shooter gaming engine, or because it's in a virtual world, people are going to be so completely crazed at the idea of walking around an avatar in a space, it's going to be enough to hook them. You know what I mean?
Yep. And that's why, I picked on the art right? The 8-bit art, 16-bit art, too. I don't think necessarily the art is the cool factor to get people engaged. I know when Minecraft first came out, everyone was like, ooh, it's an 8-bit game. It's so cool. Well, no, the cool part, at least in my mind, would have been the creation aspect, the discovery aspect, right? Which is about gameplay, not about aesthetics.
But it was also restriction of the environment that required you to be creative. I mean, for you, Michael, for example, I know that you like crafting, right? In the games that you played, the Star Wars Galaxies, World of Warcraft, da, 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 you like the crafting aspect.
I like the crafting and the discovery.
Yes. For me, the crafting aspect is tedious as grinding. You know, that's not something that gets me. But I definitely enjoy those kinds of games anyway because there are other aspects of them that draw me in. So the thing I wanted to come back to, though, Michael, for you was on the concept that you espoused on the randomness and the focus on reinforcing behavior. And mm-hmm. Phaedra made, I think, the very appropriate point that said it's not just the randomness, it's the targeted randomness too. So the space that I'm heading in is games and certain websites, even like a Facebook environment and others, really want you to stick with your eyeballs on those sites as long as possible, because the game environment wants you stuck there because you're more likely to do in-app purchases the longer that you're there, because you'll get frustrated with something and you'll be like, I'll spend a dollar and I can get past this, or there's content here, I'll want it, I'll just spend the money for it. From a work perspective, this is an interesting thing for me, because there's some work tasks that the whole idea is about productivity, get the task done faster, as opposed to be stickier for the person working on it, right? You wouldn't want a salesperson who gets so enamored, for example, with the CRM game, that they're playing the CRM game so much that they're not talking to customers.
You know, I think I know we've got a time limit for today, but I think this would be a really good discussion to dive a lot deeper next week.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think so.
And
Peter, what do you think?
I agree.
So what I'd like to do is suggest that, you know, people kind of give a little bit of their thoughts to our entry on the blog this week, and we'll go deeper onto the idea of, you know, that stickiness factor and the random reward factor and how that might play out into certain behaviors.
I like this plan. This is good.
Well, and, you know, in the game, the ninja headquarters is just a log because, you know, ninja headquarters, you shouldn't be able to find it. This is just great.
It's log.
I'm taking a picture of that right now. Ninja HQ.
Cool. Well, I know we got to run, do we want to do a very quick savings throw?
Sure. So I'll start. Did you hear about that the Superman has now landed in Russia? We had a big meteor event happen sometime early this morning. Did you hear about that on the news?
I actually saw a post about that, and I didn't have context. I'm going to have to dig deeper.
Yeah, massive meteor. Well, not so massive, I guess, but a small meteor enough to injure a whole bunch of people out in Russia. But,
oh, my goodness.
So there's a Superman speculation on the internet.
Cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Michael.
All right. Well, my savings throw, guys, is something that I was alerted to based upon a tweet I saw from Hermione One. And this is the Cards Against Humanity, a game that's billed as a free party game for horrible people. And the object of the game here, and you can download everything for free and you can print it out yourself if you want, or you can get them printed, is that you pick one question card from a black card, and then everybody else has to take their white cards and answer with their funniest possible one. So a black card might be a romantic candlelit dinner would be incomplete without, and then the examples that come
Superman's
through here are the hiccups.
Superman's meteorite hit in Russia.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. Well, my savings throw is an app that I talked about, I think, a couple of weeks ago called Moves. And I'm finding that it is actually changing behavior. I went into the office yesterday and parked twice the distance from where I normally park so that I could walk in and gain additional steps.
Nice.
So, well, I'm looking forward to our deep dive next week on this discussion and everyone else's feedback over on our website at gamesatwork.biz or on our Facebook page at gamesatwork_biz or on our Google Plus page or on our Twitter account or anywhere else that you find us. Even, you know, rate us on iTunes and tell us what you think.
Or on the Zune.
Or on the Zune store. Sounds great.
Hey, everybody. Have a good rest of the day.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.